Hey, we want to welcome you back to the Enduring Churches podcast. Here we are going into our second week of 2021. And, you know, we're recording this a whole year behind because it's still 2020.
Well, some people say that we're behind anyway, Alan, right?
That's probably true.
Oh, it's going to take me an entire year to be able to write 2021 on, you know, pieces of paper. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and we write so few checks and stuff today.
Yeah.
I think I wrote 1980 something on one not long ago. Yeah, I don't know. But they all say, you know, my kids tell me I'm stuck in the 80s anyway because I still like the 80s music.
Amen,
better.
Amen, brother.
But it's because it was better.
It was better. That's right. Yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, I had great disc jockeys back then too. Absolutely. Especially at small Baptist colleges.
Uh-huh. The best. The best.
Yeah, you can bring out our radio voices for today's episode, Trent. We can be I'm the big guy with the small name bringing you the best of the best. So, anyway, well, we've already digressed. We haven't even started yet.
We're moving backwards, man. Yeah, oh, my goodness.
That's okay.
Yeah. Well, hey, we want to get into our topic today, and that is 5 ways to crush your staff. We want to talk through this and get you to think about how that you deal with your staff as from a pastor standpoint, if you've got some volunteers or paid staff. But also I want you to think through this if you're a church member and how you deal with your pastor and staff. And so Alan, the very first thing that I think one of the top ways that you can really crush your staff, and you may not think about this, is withholding direction from them. And when I say that, you know, we know that the scripture says that without vision, a people perish, or without direction, people perish. And so from a pastor standpoint, sometimes we don't tell our staff or our volunteers what they can do, should do. We just kind of leave them floundering.
Yeah, direction is hugely important. And, you know, I love vision. You love vision. We both kind of have a strong sense of vision. But if you're going somewhere and you're not taking anyone with you, you're not leading, right?
That's right.
So you've got to take people with you. And especially those who you're counting on, you got to give them direction. The direction they're going, is it in tune and in step with the vision and the direction mm-hmm. that you're moving? But the second thing too, are they growing? Because we have a responsibility to grow those around us. They should grow in who they are.
Yeah, and so we're wanting to help them become all that God has for them to be. And sometimes I think that we forget that we're also the pastor to our staff. We expect so much of them, and we don't actually pastor them and we just expect them to kind of do on their own. And so all that kind of goes together. Also thinking about from a church member standpoint, Alan, when you hire a pastor, do you explain your vision? It always drives me crazy that, you know, a search committee will ask a new pastor or a pastor candidate, what's your vision for our church? I'm like, that's a stupid question. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's a stupid question because they don't know your church. How can they have a vision for your church? I don't think
you're really painting them into a corner. You're actually putting that pastor in a position where he's got to choose a vision mm-hmm. and then he's got to try to align the church to what he said he was going to do instead of getting to know the church and actually taking mm-hmm. a little time so he can form a God-sized vision for the church. And yeah, it's a really backwards question. You know, it's maybe a fair question, what's your vision in ministry or mm-hmm. something like that, but mm-hmm. to ask a specific vision like that is not good. All right, you can't provide something that you really just don't know the background of. And churches really do paint themselves into a corner a lot. You know, the worst hire you ever make is the wrong hire. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that sometimes the person's the wrong person. I think the process is the wrong process. And we need to really work on that on the front end of it. And you know, we'll put a tag into this episode. We actually have a two-series one on calling a pastor that I think was really helpful. But yeah, Trent, you're right. Direction's everything. What do you really expect from the role of pastor in your church? Because that does change, vary from church to church based on their structure and based on their identity.
Yeah, and I want to say here at this point too, if you're wanting to ask that question about, you know, what's your vision, I guess maybe another way to go about that is to say, are you willing to pray with us as a church family to find God's vision over the next year? Because I don't think, you know, expectations are, Dana and I, when we meet with couples, we always say that expectations are landmines. You don't know that they're there, but you can step on one and lose a limb. And so, you know, you want to ask that candidate for a pastor if he's humble enough to pray together with the church. And I would say you need to pray for a year before you can really feel confident about that direction and vision for your church. But you need to do it all together. Don't just say, okay, pastor, come up with a vision for us.
Yeah, I mean, that is great advice, Trent. And you do want to avoid those landmines, because every limb is essential. You want all of them.
I've kind of gotten used to mine, you know.
Well, that really ties into that second part, and that's withholding the story. You know, churches sometimes fail to tell their story. Mm-hmm. You know, and those stories are important. It seems like we only pull those out or remember those at celebrations. You know, a few years ago, I was invited to go back to my church, my first church, for their 125th anniversary.
Wow.
And what a special thing. You know, in 125 years, that church had never fired a pastor.
Wow. That's miraculous.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. And how God's hand has been on that church and blessed that little church. And, you know, it was a thriving farming community, and then it wasn't a thriving farming community, and then it was a dying community, and then the church moved to a place of growth. And you know what a great story. But if you don't hear the stories and you don't know the stories, you're missing out on something.
And Alan and I have talked about that in a previous episode. We talked about traditions in our church and how it's so important. For if you want to continue a tradition, you have to be willing to share the story of how that tradition came about, why that's so important to your church. Because just thinking about it from a standpoint of a new staff member or new pastor coming into a church, if you don't know the story, it's certainly not important to you. The tradition isn't. And and that this can cause all kinds of issues and problems, and this can crush you, crush that staff member by they're going, you know, doing something different, and then all of a sudden the entire church is really torqued off at them. And so they don't know why. So you got to share the story.
Stories matter, and they matter for your staff as well. Mm-hmm. When you're leading people, they need to know the whys you come up with things. And, you know, I just actually went through that. My staff looked at me the other day in our meeting and said, "So what's your word for next year?" Mm-hmm. I always have a word, you know, where's God directing us? And I told them, I said, "I've never gone into a year without any word at all. I don't know." Mm-hmm. And I could see that look of concern on their face, because, you know, well, where are you going? And we wrote down some words together. They actually took that initiative and helped. And then I was able to go back the other day and tell Luke, I was able to say, the word is forward. Mm-hmm. I know that the word is forward. And so I've grateful for my staff, but now we share that story, right?
Right.
We share the angst, and it's understandable. This year we've been so focused on this year. The planning for next year is at an all-time low, right? I mean, so this is important.
Well, we're kind of gun shy about planning, because every plan we've made for the last year has been shot down or changed at the last minute. So yeah, I get it. So withholding direction, withholding the story, both of those, if you do those, you can crush your staff. So if you ever wanted to crush your staff, there you go. But the third thing is that another way that you can really hurt your staff, hurt your pastor, is withholding appreciation. Alan, you know, this is a hard thing.
Right, because we should not go into ministry longing for appreciation. Yeah. I mean, if your goal is to be patted on the back and you need that to thrive in ministry, go find something else to do.
Yeah.
There's only one voice that has to say well done at the end of this, right?
Right.
But
yeah, the other side.
However, <of that. laughs> however,
that's the Christian thing to say. Yes.
Yes. Every person wants some appreciation. Everyone wants to be recognized for their hard work, and that goes both ways so quickly. You know, I know many pastors in the month of October are just bombarded with appreciation from their churches. And then there's other pastors who will lament the fact that they didn't even get a card or as much as a thank you at all. And, you know, I hate that we created a pastor appreciation month. I cringe every October for that reason, because I know that many are set up for disappointment.
Right.
And stuff, but yeah, it's hard. It's a hard balance, isn't it? I mean, do you find that struggle too?
Yeah, it's very hard. And we do set people up for disappointment because, honestly, I would say there's probably 50% of the pastors out there won't receive any appreciation during that time. I met with a search committee recently that was looking for a pastor, and I was helping them get ready for that process. And so now they've called a pastor, and one of the first things I sent to them was some directions like, okay, you need to, first of all, you need to get to know the love language of that new pastor that you have. And then, you know, find ways throughout the year to speak to that love language. You know, is it gifts? Is it words of affirmation, physical touch, whatever, you know, maybe this person. Yeah, and we, I don't know why, Alan, we say, oh, well, you're not very spiritual if you need gifts. That's not true. That's not true at all.
Yeah, I've got a staff member who that is definitely their love language, and I have to remember that every now and then. And fortunately, my wife helps me with that. But yeah, I mean, that's important.
Yeah.
To meet people right where they're at, and that's true. In that pastoral role, find out what really excites your pastor. If you are in kind of the leadership role, find out what really communicates to your staff, and make sure that you're appreciating them on a regular basis.
Yeah, and you know, talk well about them to others. That's that words of affirmation part of it. That, you know, when you're standing up in front of your church, you appreciate them in front of everyone too, you know. So that can be a big deal, and I know that makes us uncomfortable because that seems unchristian, talking about appreciation all the time. I don't know why we believe that, but it's certainly not true. But the next thing, another way that you can crush your staff or your pastor is to make them choose between work and family. And that's done in a lot of different ways, isn't it, Alan?
Yes, and if you were listen to our podcast every week, our last one of 2020, we were talking through an article we had read from LinkedIn about the changing workplace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, churches need to be up on this one. You really need to get a clue about what's going on in the workplace. You know, you and I, before we began recording today, we're talking about a church where they expected the pastor to be in the office 40 hours a week. So 40 office hours a week. Wow. If that's your church, good luck holding on to a pastor today, especially if you're in the position, you're trying to hire a millennial or Gen Z pastor. Mm-hmm. You're not going to find anyone take you up on that offer. I mean, even a workaholic millennial is not going to take that. So,
right.
You know, that's crazy. It's crazy.
Well, yeah. And so basically you're saying to them, you know, we want you to work 80 hours a week because there's so many things outside of the office that we still expect to happen and to get done. And we want you to come visit us in the hospital. We want you to be at our house when we have a major blow up. We want you to go be involved in all the different denominational things and all this and still have 40 hours a week. So,
yeah. And it's amazing to me that churches can expect so much and then they wonder why their pastor's burned out. They mm-hmm. wonder why he's having family problems. They wonder why all these things are going on. And it is just tragic to really think about. You know, let's just be honest. Trent, you and I find ourselves working from home more and more these days.
Yeah.
And part of that was the pandemic, but part of it is there's just less distractions mm-hmm. for us. We get more done, and we get it done more quickly.
Yeah, that's right. We have some focused time. Well, and I think, Alan, it would be a good place for us to go back and mention in the episodes we've talked about before, the work week is changing to a 3-2-2 instead of a 40-hour, 5-day-a-week in the office standard. And so, you know, being able to work either 3 days at the office or 2 days at the office and then working the other days virtually or from home and then taking 2 days off. That's kind of moving toward the standard, isn't it, Alan?
Yes, and I think that's going to continue. I just don't see that going away. You know, once people have gotten a taste for working at home, and you know they've made the choice to homeschool, and they've made all these other decisions, I think you're just going to see this trend continue to grow and grow and grow and grow. And even though the article also said the office will try to woo you back, mm-hmm. it's going to have to woo you back with that understanding that you're just not going to be there as often. So, yeah, I mean, the workplace is changing and the church workplace needs to change. And pastors, leaders, you need to recognize that for your staff as well. You really need to create some flexibility. You know, I was joking with my father-in-law, and you know, he's been in ministry for quite some time. He could be retired, but he continues to serve the local church. But he is not a morning person.
Oh, yeah.
He just soon go up to his office, you know, at 10 o'clock and get a little work done and in the evening. And, you know, fortunately, his pastor's smart enough. Hey, you do a great job, mm-hmm. you know, so make it work for you. And I think that's important. Make it work for you.
Right. And, you know, I'm glad you said that because it becomes flexible based on the person. I've told several people, and I know, Alan, you and I learned this a long time ago. You kind of divide the day into three sections. And so if I've got an event that's going to be going on in the evening, well, then I'm going to choose not to work either the morning or the afternoon at the church. I can't do all three sections at the church. I have to have one of those sections at least away from the church, whether it's at home with my family or doing something else away from the church. So you divide the day into three sections and you work two of them.
And I try to do nothing important in the middle part of my day, mm-hmm. in that middle section, because I'm terrible. I'm not focused. Mm-hmm. And you know, now that I don't drink as much soda, I don't even have my Dr. Pepper high to go on anymore. Yeah. So it's hard. So think about too, when is your best time? If you're going to pigeonhole someone into your schedule and into a schedule, you might not be getting their best either. So it's important to think about that.
Right. And so from a leader standpoint, from a pastor leader standpoint, think of your staff in those directions, say, and give them some flexibility. From a church member standpoint, think about your pastor and anybody else who's working there at the church and give them that flexibility either. Or you can crush them and expect them to be there 40 hours a week, right?
Yeah, but that's only four, Trent. There's one more.
Oh, hey.
And what's that?
And so the last one is to talk about them instead of talking to them. This is huge. You want to crush somebody that works in your church, this is the way to do it.
Yeah, you know, I remember having the conversation with my staff when they first came aboard is that, you know, you can't talk about me to people. You know, you can't run me down behind my back, and I can't do that to you. Those are deal breakers. And you know, I think there's a reason that I've been able to keep my staff together for as long as I have, and that's not anything great that I've done. It's because they took that to heart as much as I did, And because there is a sense of trust, you know, when you bring in a new staff person, especially in a smaller size church, one of the first things that's going to happen is anyone who has a problem with you is going to go to them, and they're going to try to strike up a division. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you've created the right stuff, that's not going to happen. In fact, those things will actually serve to unite you, mm-hmm. and drive a further rift between those people and what's going on. It actually strengthens your stance. Mm-hmm. But people don't want to be talked about. If you got an issue, talk to them. And we've had some challenging conversations.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and that makes me think of the book Crucial Conversations, which I would encourage you to get to read. It's also available on audiobook and things like that. I found my copy. It was a cassette tape copy. It's like, I don't even have a cassette tape player anymore. My goodness.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of sad that we've got a lot of great books from the past that kind of have fallen out of print and stuff, and sometimes they're hard to find, but there's still some gold.
Oh yeah,
there's still some gold from some of those early ministry books. But
yeah,
So those conversations are huge, right?
Yeah. So search that up on Amazon or something, or you can get a lot of good used books on eBay too. But you know, make sure that you have that trust. And the quickest way to get rid of trust is to start talking about somebody to someone else. It's talking about your staff to some of your church members, and it gets back to them. And we mentioned in our last episode, Alan, that character is huge. I mean, even more so now.
Well, yeah, our character and our Christian character, the Bible tells us very clearly, if you've got a problem with someone, you are to address it one-on-one first.
That's right.
And that's character. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is page one, mm-hmm. on the character list. And we've done that. My staff has called me out. You know, they've come in, they've closed the door, and both of them have said, Alan, we need to talk to, mm-hmm. you about something we've observed. You know, and I'm grateful that I have that relationship with them. And because this year we've needed each other like we've never needed each other before. I think we each went into a staff meeting this year in broken pieces, where we were able to pick each other up. Mm-hmm. And you want to build those relationships. You don't want to have a toxic relationship where they look at you and all they can see is a liar or a manipulator or, mm-hmm. anything like that. You want to have a blessing in those relationships. And I'm blessed with two amazing people. Well, really three amazing people on my church staff when you count our office personnel. So I'm truly, truly, mm-hmm. blessed.
Well, and so these are ways that, you know, if you do all these things that we just talked about, withholding direction, withholding the story, withholding appreciation, making them choose between work and their family, or talking about them instead of talking to them, you can crush someone and run somebody away from your church. But our purpose is not for you to do that. The reason we're talking about this is to encourage you to do the opposite of these things. And we want you...
Today is opposite day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm not turning my clothes around backwards, but yeah.
Oh, okay. But yeah, those are great. These are great, great reminders of what we don't want to be. Mm-hmm. And so make sure that you are building those things. And next week, Trent, we're going to talk about five ways to build better relationships in the church. And I look forward to that because I think that kind of will kind of go hand in hand with what we've talked about today. So Trent, how can people reach out to us? Maybe they need a church consultation or something like that. So how can they reach out to us?
Yeah, we want to be available to you all, not just on this podcast, which we love doing this podcast. We laugh a lot. We have a good time. We should probably record the B-roll before and afterwards.
Because we should.
Yeah, but beyond this podcast, you can contact us at enduringchurches.com, on Facebook as well. You can email us at alan@enduringchurches.consulting or trent@enduringchurches.consulting. We just want to be available to you.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about our B-roll, you understand it is G-rated. That's G for goofy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But But anyway, we do want to come alongside and just journey with you in ministry, because we are here to help you and your church endure. So thanks for joining us, and we look forward to catching you next week.